good morning. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Calvin Butenoff, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Thank you so very much for joining us. Just a reminder, download the Civic Media app. It is absolutely free, and you can listen to all of the stations and all of the shows all across the Civic Media Network. So download the Civic Media app wherever you buy your apps, and you can call and text directly from that. What have we said before, Greg, about the Civic Media app? It probably won't change the entire course of your life, but it shouldn't make it worse.
I think that's very fair. I think that's can be, I mean, we haven't put it to scientific or scientific method.
We haven't market tested this yet.
But I really feel confident. I'm like 98% sure that this app will not make your life worse.
It really shouldn't. Yeah. Coming up at 11:33, very excited to talk to our friend, Professor of Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. David Drake is going to be here to talk about animals on the move. And if you're walking your dog around dusk or so, you may catch a whiff of what's going on in nature. So David Drake will be here to talk about that. If you ever want to join us, you can call or text at 855-75-CIVIC or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and former Twitter. It is happening tomorrow night before we go to bed.
Friday.
Yeah, today is Friday.
It's Thursday.
Tomorrow night before we go to bed, you have to move your clocks ahead 1 hour because on Sunday, daylight saving time kicks in. I found an article in Time magazine under public health that says daylight saving time is the worst.
Sounds real professional.
From Jeffrey Kluger. Thank you, Jeffrey. You are speaking to my heart. This Sunday at 2 a.m., the U.S. and about a third of the world's other countries move their clocks forward by 1 hour, making it seem like the sun is rising later and hanging in the sky longer, even though that's not the case. I am not alone in dreading it. Plenty of people want nothing to do with daylight saving time. It's bad for health, bad for safety, bad for your mood, and just plain unpopular. But that does not stop us from changing our clocks pointlessly twice a year. This is from Time magazine. Jeffrey Kluger talking about how we're springing ahead this weekend, losing an hour of sleep for the next few months.
I don't care about any of your whining. I like it.
What is it that you like about it?
I like it being lighter out longer. I like the daylight. And it's not seeming. It is. The light's out there. It's happening. Just because time is a construct to begin with. Not just time itself. The magazine is a construct as well. We invented it all. Time magazine. But I like the days being longer. It's just nicer, especially in the summertime. A nice, like you go on your porch at 8:30 on a Tuesday and it's still light out. That's nice. Versus dark at 4:30.
It wouldn't be dark at 4:30. Not in the summertime.
I'm talking about wintertime. I'm saying
it's always dark at 4:30 in the wintertime.
I'm saying if we had this, what we're going to do all the time, it wouldn't be dark so soon.
It would be worse.
Well,
if we had permanent daylight saving time, it would be worse.
Calvin's trying to censor me, taking me off the air.
Calvin's taking my side, obviously.
I will not be silenced.
Calvin agrees with me.
For me, I like this more, and that's it.
I think most people will agree with you, Greg. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Where do you come down on daylight saving time? I think we should stay with standard time all year long.
Yeah.
I just do.
So did Congress, and they couldn't even make that happen.
Well, it's amazing they can agree on anything. Calvin, how do you feel personally?
I'll buy you squirt for a month.
As a resident young person, about daylight saving time.
I
squirt for a month.
I don't have preference on which one we stay with. I just don't like switching.
Just so we stay with one.
Yeah. Just stay with one.
Pick one. Pick a side.
I know what my side is. I'm down with it. We got a text from Dave in Waukesha. Jane, I'll plan to bring this up every time the time changes. If we didn't have DST, daylight savings time, sunrise in summer for people in Milwaukee would be 4:15 a.m. That means you'll see the sunlight at 3:45 a.m. Hard pass.
We're all sleeping.
Some people don't sleep well. Some people, when the light comes pouring through,
it's called curtains.
Wow, you just don't feel. Man,
it's
thought you
shades. I thought, people, I look at. I mean, go to the store.
More like you're throwing shade at day. My goodness.
855-75-CIVIC. We turn our clocks ahead 1 hour on Saturday night for daylight saving time. Cindy from Appleton. Good morning, Cindy. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hello. Well, the zone that we're in right now is the one that I prefer because I must be part vampire because I like it getting dark early.
You do.
I have to go to bed early because I need to be up at 5 o'clock in the morning for my school bus route. So I'm one of these two. I'm very sensitive to light. I like it getting dark early. So if I want to go to bed at 8 or 8:30, I can do that.
And so,
but they're called curtains, Cindy.
But so it wouldn't bother you though if the sun started rising earlier. If it started rising at 3:45, because you have to get up early anyway.
Yeah, that wouldn't bother me, and it's better for the kids because I don't have to be picking kids up in the dark.
Think of the children, Greg.
Put a flashlight on their head.
Think of the children.
Put a flashlight on their head. I don't care.
Thank you so much, Cindy. Thank you so very much for listening. 855-75-CIVIC. 855-752-4842.
Hey, Jane, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
How many clocks do you have to manually?
Oh, I love clocks.
Oh, wow. Are you to clocks what Brittany Merlot, our civic media meteorologist, is to barometers? Do you have a clock problem?
My name is Jane, and I have a clock problem.
How many clocks do you... Oh, daylight savings time, pshaw. Let's talk about this. How many clocks do you own?
I love clocks. I think they're beautiful.
Okay. Do you have a grandfather clock?
We do not. We wouldn't have room for it. But I when we first got married, I talked about that quite a bit.
Okay. Well, how many clocks do you own?
There's three in the...
She's still counting.
There's three in the kitchen alone.
Why do you...
That doesn't count the...
The oven?
Microwave or the oven.
So just in case you're like, you're washing dishes or Paul's washing, whoever, I don't want to assign duties.
Okay.
You're like, hey, what time is it? You can look above you and be like, oh, there's a clock right there. But then you turn around to like get something off the oven. You're like, I don't want to turn around to look at that clock. I got a clock right here on this
they're
wall.
They're decorative. And
do some, they? But they work.
Well, yes.
So they're functional.
Some of them have the pendulums, you know, and the swingy thing. And it's a little piece of art on the wall.
I'm not, here's the thing is, I'm not making fun. I find this fascinating. How many clocks do you have to manually?
There's about 15.
15?
There's about 15 to 20. I like them.
I think because you own 15 clocks, we can declare you insane. Therefore, your opinion on daylight savings time is void.
I think because I have 15 clocks, that gives me more authority.
I don't know.
About the whole DST thing.
We got a texter from the 715 listening to WLAK. I'm with Jane. Standard time has scientific evidence. Put your hands down.
Yay!
Scientific evidence is better for us. I believe in science. I believe in science, too. I just like longer days in the summer, and we wouldn't have those if we had... The standard stuff.
It would still be light until 7:30.
You know what? You can want what you want. I get to want what I want. And guess what? What I want is happening at 2 a.m. on Sunday.
Heated discussion. 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Papa Rico, oh, brilliant. She used the safety argument. That's right, Papa Rico. Think of the children.
Well...
And did you know that the Wonder Oven comes with a convenient clock attached? Now you're just taunting me, Papa Rico.
The clock, though, is an additional $200.
Probably.
And in our house, I asked the question because, like, so in our house, I don't even think our oven, I think our oven is self-changing.
Oh, really?
Maybe, probably, maybe not. The fridge is. We don't use the microwave time at all. Yeah, but like
you don't have any other clocks in your kitchen except for the microwave?
No, because we have one of those. When we bought the house came with a really nice refrigerator, and that refrigerator has a window on it, and that window has the clock.
Fancy.
It might be the fanciest. It's fancier than my car. But yeah, I don't think I have to change one clock, but for the oven, everything else is done automatically.
So you're telling me you have a clock deficit in your house.
Yeah, and I'm in no need or wanting of any clocks of an unwanted nature in the Matinair household. So thank you very much.
Dave from Waukesha on the text line. Stop yucking our yum, Jane. Oh, fine. Go ahead.
Dave with the...
You DST people. Just fine. go have a big party this weekend and I'll enjoy all your extended light.
Fadeaway jump shot from the paint. Dave, thank you very much, Dave. Appreciate you.
Andrew in Maine, I'm all for the elimination of all time zones and everyone work off of UTC, Universal Time. That would just mean adjusting your expectations, though, since the show would be on 1600 to 1800 and the sun would have risen at 1221 today.
Did we just read the intro to a manifesto? I have no idea what that was.
I'm not sure.
Could you imagine how insane this country would go if all of a sudden they declared that we were no longer going to do the 12-hour clock? It was going to be 24 hour.
People would lose their minds.
They would attribute that, like, the calls for, like, you taking away my right to read time, which some of them I doubt they can. But yes, Greg, that's what Andrew said. Yes, Greg, it is the beginning of a manifesto. Or what was it called? An Andrew in Manifesto.
Sleep expert Adam Spira, professor of mental health at Johns Hopkins University, cites a range of problems that can happen when we trade an extra hour of sleep for an extra hour of sun, including daylight-induced sleeplessness. Studies have also linked circadian disruption to an increased risk of heart attack, stroke, inflammatory markers, and suicide.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Just reporting.
I understand that, but I want to see the numbers of people who have done that's happened to because of DST. That's what I'd like to. I want to know those numbers. You can say it. Words are words, and they make pretty sounds. But I'd be like, this person died because of daylight savings time.
Johns Hopkins University.
I know Johns Hopkins. I know both of them. Both it's not Johns Hopkins.
Frank's House of Sleep that this study is coming
but
from.
But my point ultimately is if we have the science that says it, can't we do something about it, if you will? Like, you go to bed an hour earlier, or, you know, I just can't believe it does such irreparable damage to you that in 1 hour.
We're all going to die.
60, yeah. Man.
Just a reminder, tomorrow night before you go to bed, do the clock thing. Move it ahead 1 hour.
Or if you're under the age of 100, your phone will change itself.
Yeah, maybe. Stay close. One cheese to rule them all when we return. This is Matt Nair on air, coming to you on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Why you up in this store? What you looking for? Cheese? I'm cheddar. I'm much better than the rest of these.
Don't speak too fast. You need to get a load of this. I'm Swiss.
All right, white boy. They get the gist.
Got my holes in my body. Then my boy fitted.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Boardlord Calvin, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join the show at 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream, too, on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Elon has ruined. We were talking about daylight saving time tomorrow night before you go to bed. You want to turn your clock ahead 1 hour so that you're on the right time when you wake up on Sunday. Brian from Iguanago is on the line. Good morning, Brian. Thanks for joining us. What do you want to say?
Good morning. And I just wanted to address Greg's comment about daylight savings and how he needs scientific evidence and numbers. And I just want to say that, Greg, we have scientific evidence that says vaccines work. And guess what? That's all I had to call for. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate that snide and run.
That was a terrific takedown. Get me to the hospital. What floor? The burn unit.
It'll be okay. We were talking off the air, though. Like what Calvin said, too. Can we just pick one?
Not anymore.
Apparently, we
not
can't.
Anymore. Apparently, but that last call sent me over the edge.
All right.
DST for life. Get out of my house.
We talked earlier this week with Pam Yonke, the fabulous farm babe, about the World Championship Cheese Contest going on in Madison. The winner was crowned yesterday. A Hornbacher cheese. Made by Michael Spiker of Mountain Dairy Fritzenhaus in Bern, Switzerland, named the best cheese, the third consecutive world contest in which this cheesemaker came out on top. He won in 2020 and 2022 with a Gruyere.
I love Gruyere.
I love most cheese.
And for those listening who didn't hear the Pam Yonke interview, first of all, go back. You can go back by going to civicmedia.us. You can download past shows as a podcast, subscribe to those podcasts. But you can listen to Pam Yonke talking about it. Jane, what do you think this guy won? Do you think he won a big, fancy gold watch?
They don't win anything but bragging rights.
Exactly.
Isn't that amazing?
Nothing. They don't win a car.
Nope.
They don't win money to pay for their trip.
Nope.
They volunteer their wares into this contest, and if they win, it's a hearty high five, a handshake. Here you go. Maybe like a plaque.
They probably get some kind of honorary plaque. Yeah, but as far as a cash award or anything, no. And all the judges, they're all volunteers. Yeah,
everybody's volunteers.
They do this because they love it so much. And again, if you win, you certainly get press attention.
Yeah.
And that's going to help them sell more cheese. And she did talk about some Wisconsin cheese makers who had to actually increase their production facilities after they won because the demand went so high. That's... So it is a win for the winners. But you have to love how much they love this.
Yes.
And how much they love what they do.
I don't know, what I'm about to say is going to sound really weird, but I want to love something that much in the sense of like, not because it's not a hobby. It's a life.
Absolutely.
You know, I love my wife. I love our dog, but this is something different. Like where
they're
you
all
pursue
their passion,
it.
Right?
Yeah. Your passion. You're there. And, oh, that's just amazing to me. And they don't just show up with cheese. They have to go through a process. And this process includes customs, questions, money,
transportation,
help. Like one of the things that stuck with me, Pam said that to minimize costs or to take down some of the costs, they were allowing them to quarter those cheese blocks so they could send less, so he'd spend less. And the cheesemaker said no because they didn't know which quarter to send because they were afraid quadrant one might be not as good as quadrant three
right.
or vice versa. So they still send the whole thing and they spend the money. It's the investment of money is the least of their worries. It's time and the love and the energy.
It's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
It really is. This year, they had 3,302 cheese, yogurt, butter, and dry dairy products. Judges and entries from 25 countries. So again, the big winner this year was from Switzerland, but there were a whole bunch of Wisconsin winners. Wisconsin cheese makers won 39 out of 142 categories, included among the 20 finalists was Schumann Cheese's Lake Country Dairy in Turtle Lake and Henning Cheese in Kiel. Among other Wisconsin winners, they won for cheddar, medium cheddar, aged cheddar. All cheddar is good.
Yeah.
All cheddar
really is
pretty much good.
Yeah.
Sharp provolone.
Oh, is that if it's soft, does it make it?
Ken Benzel from Belgioso Cheese in Denmark. They're sharp. Oh. They're sharp provolone. Extra aged Asiago.
Oh my God. Why all week this has been happening. I get so hungry after the show because we're talking about cheese or this or that. I'm like, I just want some noodles.
Now I would like some maple bourbon goat cheese. Is that too much to ask?
I would like a snippet of that. I don't know if I'd go hog wild on that.
Well,
but
just to have little, you know, a whole little tray.
One of the things that Pam talked about in another interview during the Midwest Farm Report, which is 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. every morning on Civic Media, these judges, they don't eat it.
No.
They chew it up, they taste it, and they spit it out.
But that's like most you know, sommeliers and wine tasters and the professionals. Can you imagine how full you would get if you had to sample 3,000, even if it was an eensy-beensy little piece of cheese?
I guess I'm just going to have to find out next year when we go.
You would sacrifice yourself for the good of our show?
Yeah. Dave from Waukesha asks, how did Kraft Singles rate this year? Get off of our show. Stop listening right now. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Kraft has its purpose among cheese foods.
Processed cheese foods.
That's a different category. It still makes a good grilled cheese.
Oh, absolutely. And Brian from McGuanago, who just called about the vaccine, he said, sorry, Greg, I couldn't resist. Well, science says you can if you just try. Brian.
That's not scientific. Good heavens. You're just digging your DST hole even deeper.
Ew. That sounds awful.
All right. News is coming up next. We'll have an entertainment minute from Pete Schwabe, who's just wonderful. And then on the other side, David Drake, an extension wildlife specialist and professor of wildlife ecology at UW-Madison, will be our guest. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
My boy 50 Cent, curdled on the street, Geneva represent.
Well, Vinny and Louie, forget about the other cheeses. We're so hardcore, you got a greatest to eat us.
You also chumps are weak. If you ask me, I can bring you to your knees with my pungency.
I'm not weak, I'm strong. I'll add flavor to your salad all night long.
We know you want to put us in your mouth. And you, don't you, we know you do.
I'm old, I'm stuck in my ways. I'm stuck in your teeth and on your breath for days.
I got more flavor than y'all. I make a wicked cheese ball. My hobbies include doing bird call. Cause somebody take over for me.
I'm living large in a condo. If I break a hip, don't put me in a home, bro.
But Pops, you don't even have a hip, though.
Oh.
This is breaking my heart. Just tell them what they want, yo.
We know you want to put us in your mouth. And you, don't you? We know you do. We know you want to put us in your mouth. And you, don't you? You know we know, we know you do.
So, what kind of cheese you want to get?
You know, I don't think I'm in the mood for cheese.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. So very, very happy to have you along with us. Jane, Matt and Air, Greg Bach, Calvin coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Shout out if you're listening to us in Wausau on Bull Falls Radio, WXCO, wherever you are in the state, in the country, around the globe. You can always join the show, call or text at 855-75-CIVIC, or if you're watching on the live stream, leave a comment there on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. Very excited to have our next guest return to the show. He has joined us before. David Drake is an extension wildlife specialist and professor at the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm fine, Jane. Good morning. Nice to see you again.
You as well. Our colleague, Pam Yonke, who is the fabulous farm babe, she did a report with you a couple of weeks ago, and I heard it when I was coming in one morning, and I'm like, ah, we get to get David back on to talk about skunks.
Yes, we were talking about skunks, something that everybody's interested in, but not the best smelling animal.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the whole thing is because of this time of year, David, we have skunks on the move. So are they, what's going on? Are they looking for love? Are they dating? Are they moving? What's happening with the skunks?
Yes. Yeah, all of the above. So there's a couple of things going on. We're into mating season right now. So typically during mating season, animals are more active. They move in greater frequency. So the males right now are seeking out females. Females are seeking out den sites to have the litters, things like that. So that's one of the reasons you see skunks or may smell skunks more frequently now than you would other parts of the year. The other thing that's going on is that the young from last year are getting kicked out of their mother's territory about this time of the year. So they have to go disperse, find some other territories, find some skunks that are also looking for mates and things like that. So we have a lot of skunks on the move right now. And especially in urban suburban areas where skunks are statewide, but in urban suburban areas, they really thrive there quite a bit. And because they're moving more than normal other times of the year, they are also crossing roads more frequently than they might in other times of the year. So the chance of them getting hit by a vehicle increases. And obviously, if a skunk gets hit by the vehicle, not only do you see the animal, but a lot of times you smell that animal for a mile before you see it and a mile after you see it.
I have so many questions. So first of all, it sounds pretty harsh to be a skunk. if you get kicked, it's like when I turned 18 and my parents said, good, here's your luggage. Now leave.
Okay, wow.
But it's like, all right, mama wants to date, so get out of the den, you know?
Well, it is, and that's not uncommon for most wildlife species, especially for carnivores, and skunks are what we call an omnivore, so they're interested in eating both meat and plants. But for a lot of animals, especially carnivores or like, you know, coyotes, wolves, fox, bear, things like that, a lot of times they'll kick the young out after a certain period of time. And so sometimes for bears, it might be the young are about 2 years old. And a lot of times it's mostly males that they're getting kicked out so that the males are not competing with if you have a dominant breeding hierarchy, the males aren't competing with the dominant male. But the other issue is a lot of times some, depending on the species, so this is not universal, but depending on the species, sometimes the females, the submissive females from past litters may stay as part of a family group. And it's also to prevent the male from breeding with his sister. And so it's to promote good genetic pools of genes and things like that. Oh. So there's reason for it. It does sound a little harsh, but nature can be harsh.
Yeah, nature is, she's tough, right, David? She's pretty tough.
I think we're all thinking about the words you want to use, but we're not going to use it, yes.
And apparently if you don't have family around, you might sleep with your sister. I don't know. That's if you're a skunk.
I'm not even going to touch that, Greg. Nice try.
David Drake is our guest. He's an extension wildlife specialist and professor of the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. We're talking about the time of the year and what's happening. And if you're, I suppose, is it dusk and dawn, David, where you're more likely to run into a skunk who's on the move?
Yeah, skunks are typically nocturnal, so they're active during the night. So, yep, they're starting to wake up as the sun's going down. They're active at night. Then they'll start going to sleep as the sun's coming back up. It's not to say that you can't see skunks during the day. Occasionally you may, especially in urban areas where skunks get, and nocturnal animals generally. So it could be raccoons, skunks, you know, coyotes, fox, whatever the case might be, that as they get more used to human beings or living around human beings or habituate to us, you may see them out during daylight hours. It doesn't necessarily mean that that animal is rabid, but at the same time, if they're primarily a nocturnal animal, we want to make sure they remain nocturnal. So we should reinstill the fear of human beings in them. And that will typically reduce or eliminate their desire to come out during the day.
How big of a litter does a female skunk have on average?
That's a good question. I want to say, and don't quote me on this, but Greg is probably looking up on Google to fact check me. I want to say like 4 to 8 or 4 to 10, something like that. Yeah. But I'm not sure. It's probably, you know, on average, it's probably 4 to 6, 3 to 6, something like that, I'm assuming. But I can't recall that right off the top of my head.
Not a problem. I guess, so when folks are out taking their dogs for a walk, and if you like to take the dog for a walk after dinner or anything, you might have a little unexpected encounter with a skunk over the next month, David?
Well, it could be over the course of the entire year. I mean, skunks are active year-round here in the state of Wisconsin. So they don't hibernate. When we get really cold stretches of weather in the wintertime, they may just hunker down in their den or under somebody's porch or something like that for a couple of days and let the cold subside. But they're active year-round. So you do have an opportunity to interact with that skunk all 12 months of the year, if you're lucky. But it's certainly this time of the year, when they're more active and they're out and about, that you may have an increased chance of that. And again, with any wild animal, if you're walking by yourself or you're walking with your dog on things like that, just keep your dog on a leash. Make sure that you bring the dog close to you and that the dog and you are not threatening to the animal. And as long as the animal has an escape path, most often they're going to go the opposite way or at least not continue to approach you. And likewise with you and your dog, you should give them a wide berth or just, temporarily go the other way for a block or two and then could get back on your path.
Yeah. They really don't want to take you on.
No.
Right. You know, they're going to flee if they can. So as you said, make sure they have an escape route and everybody should be able to get away from this. Okay.
Yes.
This is going to be a really silly question. So it was always my understanding that you would only smell a skunk when the skunk was in danger and then he would spray. But yet it seems like you will still get whiffs every once in a while. So are they, was that an oops? Or
they're just cowards, like Jane. They're just cowards.
They passed gas or something. It was
like a shark. So.
Oh my god.
So obviously they are they're in the weasel family. They, of all the weasels, they have got the most well-developed scent glands. And so that is their defense mechanism. A lot of times if they see you, they're going to kind of hold their ground. They're going to raise their tail and they're going to stomp their front feet back and forth, up and down, to kind of just say to you, hey, I mean business here.
I don't want to have to, I don't want to have to do this, but if I have to,
exactly.
I will.
But if I have to, I'm going to go all Pepe Le Pew on
this
you.
This can go two ways, buddy.
It can go two ways. It's not going to be good for you either way. That's exactly right. So, so they, you know, and their last resort is to spray, because if they spray, then they have to recharge those scent glands. So it's costing them energy to do that. And then they're going to have to, you know, whatever energy they're burning to stay warm or to move or whatever, they have to replace that energy by finding food on the landscape. So, you know, everything's a cost benefit analysis. You know, they're not doing that in their head like an accountant would necessarily, but they're like, hey, if I spray, you know, it's my last resort and that's what I'm going to do to save my life. Or to reduce the amount of danger I may be perceiving. But they also do scent, especially when they're moving around. They're not necessarily territorial animals per se, but they're scenting to let the female know they're around, or the female may be scenting as well. And so there might be a little bit of that going on. And they can control their spray, so they may just spray a little bit to say, hey, this is what you're going to get if you don't back off.
Hey, there you go. It's a little warning. So
it's a little warning.
You don't like what's going on here, buddy? You can walk away. Walk away at any time.
You don't want to take this on. You don't want to do it.
Exactly.
You think I'm going to lose my charge on you, the recharge? You're not even worth it.
David Drake is here. He is an extension wildlife specialist and a professor at UW-Madison. We're talking about skunks and avoiding skunks. And we talked a little bit earlier this week, David, about the Iditarod sled dog race.
Yeah.
Which is going on right now.
Yeah.
And we're going to get to the big animal after. I want to talk about this first, though. We were talking about porcupines. And we have porcupines in Wisconsin. We have porcupines,
we
right?
We do, yeah. And they're a native species. Yep. So they belong here in the landscape for sure.
Dog encounters with porcupines are really, really bad. Because those quills can get so deeply embedded in their paws and their fur and you really want to avoid any kind of encounter with a porcupine, right?
Yep. My parents live on about 70 acres of forest land. They live on a lake in central Minnesota, but they've got about 70 acres of forest land they own behind their house. And they have always had golden retrievers that they just let the dog out and the dog runs. On at least three different occasions, my dad has held the dog down as my mom has pulled quills out of tongues and gums and cheeks and, you know, things like that. Occasionally, they've had to bring the dog to the vet because the quills are so deeply embedded they can't get them out. But yes, you want to avoid porcupines for sure, because that does happen with the dog, and it's not pleasant for the dog. And again, it's not a good encounter with a porcupine either, because then they have to regrow those quills.
Right.
Things like that, but that is just like the skunk sprays as a defense mechanism. The porcupine and the quills are the porcupine's defense mechanism.
I just think, David, that most of us have far less experience and far fewer encounters with porcupines than we do with skunks, and because porcupines are portrayed in cartoons as different things, and I don't know that we respect just how serious those injuries can be from those quills.
Yeah, they can be for sure. You know, obviously the quills are not poisonous, like a lionfish, for example, is.
Right.
The quills off a lionfish, but certainly they can be a source of infection if you don't get them out and treated and things like that. You know, the one thing, porcupines are we think are relatively common, especially up in the northern part of the state. But the issue about porcupines is they're very good climbers. And as a matter of fact, they feel safe in the trees. So that's their escape route, is if they can climb, get to a tree, and they'll go up the tree. And once they're up the tree, then they're pretty safe from quite a few things, including our dogs. So that's the thing. Just, you know, again, if you know porcupines are in the area, just, you know, make sure that your dog is on leash and or is well-trained enough that when the dog is called, the dog will come back to you.
Am I the only person who did not realize that porcupines could climb trees?
Yeah, totally,
oh,
Jane.
You did not know that. You are making that up, Greg Buck.
Friend of the show, Ryan Mason, has a story about that. He said his sons were outside. They were camping, and they saw some porcupines. And he started yelling, porcupines. And he realized his kids have no idea what porcupines
what that
are.
Is.
So he just started yelling, needle bear, needle bear. So, yeah. That makes sense. That makes sense. They can run up trees. That's going to be a funny sight. I don't want to be anywhere near it.
No, me neither.
Well, it's pretty cool to see them up in a tree. You know, occasionally I'll get calls or emails from people who are forest landowners and they have the porcupines in their other property, and the porcupines will eat the bark off the trees.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to grow the trees for, you know, commercial value, that's not something you necessarily look upon favorably, but that's how they feed themselves, is they eat the bark off the trees. And it's pretty cool to see a porcupine up in the tree. You look up and like, hey, that looks like a needle bear.
I didn't think.
And sure enough. So, yeah.
I didn't think you could do that. David Drake is our guest. Do you have time for one more segment? We have one more question for you. Great. It's about murder ponies. We'll explain on the other side. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hush, my darling, don't fear, my darling. The lion sleeps tonight. Hush, my darling, don't fear, my darling. The lion sleeps tonight.
Welcome to Matt Nair on air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Kelby on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us, call or text at 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream if you watch on Facebook, YouTube, or the platform that Elon has ruined. And you can always email as well at Jane Says, JaneSays, Jane Says at civicmedia.us. Delighted to have our guest with us, David Drake, an Extension Wildlife Specialist and professor at the UW-Madison in the Forest and Wildlife Ecology. David, we were talking earlier about skunks on the move in Wisconsin. We're talking about porcupines and why you really want to keep your dogs away from porcupines. This goes back to our discussion earlier this week about the Iditarod, and there was a musher in the Iditarod who had an encounter with a moose.
I read about that.
And he had to shoot the moose.
Yeah.
And I got very involved in the mushing community a number of years ago, and I started following mushers on Twitter. And there's one woman in particular who calls moose murder ponies.
Oh, interesting.
These are, and I know we don't have moose in Wisconsin.
No, we don't. We occasionally, like, rarely, they will maybe dip into Wisconsin from, you know, where Wisconsin borders Minnesota or something like that. But we do not have a sustained population of moose, although moose are a native species or historically a native species of Wisconsin.
Oh, no kidding. I did not know that. Moose are terrifying.
Well, they're big, big animals for one thing. I don't know if you've ever seen one in the wild, but they are deceptively fast.
They are
extremely protective, especially when they have the young with them.
They look
and
so...
They are neat animals, for sure. And on top of the fact that they can kick you, the bulls or the males also have the big racks on them, and they can do some serious damage with that. So yes, they're nothing to mess around with.
I had no idea that they could move quickly. They look like such lumbering, they are so large. You kind of assume that they're not going to be able to zoom.
You think about the things you have to run away from,
when you're a moose.
When you're a human.
If you're a human, like
a bear or a forest cat type of thing, or a zombie, not a moose, coming at you.
With all of those things, Greg, again, you don't have to outrun the animal. You have to outrun the slowest member of your party.
Fair.
That's the key part of that.
Just remember, Jane, I'm always going to trip you.
Classic, classic survival method is outrun the slowest one. Yep.
Yes, exactly.
Have you ever seen a moose?
Oh, yeah, many times. My family and I used to go up into the Boundary Waters canoe trips many, many years when I was growing up. And so we would occasionally see them in the waters up there. I've seen them outside of Anchorage, Alaska, in Alaska. And as a matter of fact, moose are kind of an urban adapted species. So they will bump up against the city limits of Anchorage, for example. And you know, but that's Anchorage is kind of a rural city to begin with. So I've seen them there, and they are just really cool, majestic animals for sure. But, you know, we've got them up in Maine. There was a story, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago about a moose. I think it was coming out of Maine or New Hampshire that was down into Massachusetts, into some suburban areas of Massachusetts. You know, it was kind of cool. And then they've got an issue over in Moose. I haven't followed that story very much lately, but they had an issue over in Moose. They had an issue in Minnesota with the moose over there that were dying unexpectedly, and they weren't quite sure what was killing it, but they thought, if I recall, this had something to do, I thought, with
was it a wasting disease?
No, it's not a chronic wasting disease. It's not like that. I think it had to do with an insect. I apologize for not remembering the particulars of this, but if you Google it, you can read about it. I'm not sure again where they are with unraveling the mystery of that, but that was an alarming turn of events for a while over in Minnesota.
So what we have learned in the last half hour is run away. You know, if it's a skunk or a porcupine or a moose, just run away.
So here's the thing is, I'm just going to be honest. And David, I really appreciate your advice. You're right. You have to be faster than the slowest person. But I think I just need to be honest with myself. And in any, whether it's a moose apocalypse, zombie apocalypse, small porcupine apocalypse, I'm dead. I don't run that fast.
Well, you'd be amazed at how fast you can run. I mean, I like to take my 85-year-old mother a lot of times with me when I'm out in the woods. just I know I can outrun her.
David Drake does nothing but believe in you. David Drake is a believer in people, and that's what I love most.
I am a champion of people.
Yes, exactly.
100%. Unapologetic.
We love having you on the show. Yeah. It's always so much fun. David Drake with UW Madison. Thank you so very, very much for joining us.
If I have 2 seconds, I was just going to mention, I would just read this morning, I think in the New York Times, that musher got penalized because he did not satisfactorily
got the moose.
Field dress the animal.
Yep. Yeah. So they tacked on 2 hours. They tacked on 2 hours to his time, which is
amazing.
Yeah, which is really
what should we do to punish him? I don't know. Put 2 hours on his time, I guess.
I guess so. Thank you so much, David.
Thank you.
Well, hopefully we'll talk to you soon. And that was a great show.
That's a great show.
What a fun show.
Very, very fun.
You had a special shout out.
I have a special shout out today. It's International Women's Day, and I want to give a special shout out to my niece, Olive, who's turning 6 today. She was born on International Women's Day. Her mothers are very proud of her, and I am very proud of her because she is awesome, amazing, smart, and so capable, and I hopefully will see her run the world one day. So happy birthday to you, Olive. Uncle Greg loves you a lot. Have a wonderful day.
Happy birthday from all of us, Olive.
All of us.
All right. We have news coming up next. After that, the one and only Todd Father, Todd Alba, from noon until 2. And then Maggie Dawn from 2 to 4 p.m. Thank you to our guests today, Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, David Drake from UW-Madison. Thank you, Greg and Calvin. You make the show run. And thank you, all of you, so very, very, very much for listening and calling and for texting. It means everything. I hope you find some joy this weekend and you have a chance to share it. Don't go away. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.